You remember that the angel who is pictured flying in the midst of heaven in Revelation 14, 6 and 7 has the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth. Another translation calls it the eternal gospel or good tidings. Truth is one from age to age. And yet it is also true that there are special times when present truth is due the world. Noah had a message about the flood coming. That was present truth. John the Baptist had a message that the Messiah was about to appear. That was present truth. And you and I have a message that's destined to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. Christ is coming soon, and God has given us, praise his name, the message to get a people ready. Let's turn, please, to Matthew, the 17th chapter, and the 11th verse. Matthew 17, 11. Jesus answered and said unto them, Elijah truly shall first come and restore all things. This is the message of Elijah that God has committed to his people. Its mission is to do what? Restore all things. You remember that in the Garden of Eden, two divine institutions were given to men. What were they? The Sabbath and the home. And the concept of the divine authority in each and the divine creation in each, the concept of that must be fully restored. Has the devil tried to do away with both of them? Pervert, twist, misapply? Yes. But one of the great purposes of this class is to help us get hold of beautiful concepts of the home and marriage. And this means all that marriage includes. The expression of love that belongs to marriage in the most holy place of the home. The physical relationships that are involved in marriage. The bearing of children. All of these we need to have pure concepts of. We need to think of them as experiences ordained by God, arranged by God, for the purpose of revealing love, expressing love, perpetuating the race, and the other purposes that marriage was designed to bring about. And all of this is, of course, to reveal God's love to and in and through the family. It's all to reveal the love of God. Let's notice Hebrews, the 13th chapter now, and the 4th verse. And we shall need to go quickly from reference to reference this afternoon, for we have a number of references to cover. Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. The expression the bed here means the marriage bed, the physical relationship of marriage. And you notice he says, marriage is what? Honorable. In how many? In all. Now, as we shall see, this doesn't mean that everybody must get married. But it is what? It's honorable. In all. Turn now into your Adventist home 121. And we will notice the spirit of prophecy statement. Second paragraph, and 121. Jesus did not enforce celibacy upon any class of men. Now, in one great church calling itself the church, the priests, in most cases, are required to practice celibacy. That is, they're not allowed to marry. But this says Jesus did not what? Enforce celibacy upon any class of men. He came not to destroy the sacred relationship of marriage, but to exalt it and restore it to its original sanctity. He looks with pleasure upon the family relationship where sacred and unselfish love bears sway. 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter, we'll not turn to it, but put in your notes, 1 Timothy 4, 1-3, shows that it is the spirits of devils that teach heretical doctrines such as forbidding to marry. That's the expression there, forbidding to marry. Now, in the spirit of prophecy, we have in different places expressions recommending marriage especially for people in certain responsibilities. For instance, Councils on Health, CH 585, says, and I read, "It is better that our physicians be married men, whose wives can unite with them in the work." Now notice, the great purpose in this sentence for physicians being married is that their wives should do what? Unite with them in the work. If you read the whole page, you'll see the importance of it. Again, on the same page, we have another illustration of responsibilities that are especially for married people. Connected with each sanitarium should be a man and his wife of mature age who are as firm as a rock to the principles of truth, who can act as guides and counselors. Let me add on this. There are those that seem to think that anybody that's married must be a good counselor because they're married. You'll notice that the spirit of prophecy more than once stresses the importance of maturity and experience. In volume 6, page 74, I'll not read that, but it speaks of the mission home in which a number of workers are connected in a mission family. It says this should be in charge of a man and his wife. Again, in Councils on Health 485, we read concerning a city work, a health restaurant. With every restaurant, there should be connected a man and his wife who can act as guardians of the helpers. A man and woman who love the Savior and the souls for whom he died and who keep the way of the Lord. 484 says, "The girls and the young women in our restaurants need a shepherd. Every one of them needs to be sheltered by home influences." So you see in these various phases of the work, evangelistic, medical, health food, educational, we need at least some married people who can act in certain positions of responsibility involving the shepherding of various ones, young and old. Now, I think I have read enough from the Bible and the spirit of prophecy to point out the exalted character of marriage and the necessity of marriage. And yet, and don't forget anything I've read in what I'm about to read, and yet, it is equally clear that God has called some people to the single life just as definitely as he calls some to the married life. Turn to Matthew, the 19th chapter, verses 11 and 12. Matthew 19, verses 11 and 12. Jesus had been giving in the earlier part of this chapter some instruction concerning marriage and divorce. And as the disciples heard the high standard that Jesus had presented, they said in the 10th verse, "If it's that way, it might be better not to marry." 11th verse, "But he said unto them, all men cannot receive this saying, save they to whom it is given. For there are some eunuchs which were so born from their mother's womb, and there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men. And there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it." Now you notice that in the statement Jesus is making here, before he makes it and after he makes it, he repeats that it isn't for everybody. Is that clear? But nevertheless, he makes it. And he says, he that is able to receive it, let him receive it. Let me read this statement from some of the modern versions that it may be a little clearer to our understanding. In today's English version, I read, "This teaching does not apply to everyone, but only to those to whom God has given it. For there are different reasons why men cannot marry, some because they were born that way, others because men made them that way, and others do not marry because of the kingdom of heaven. Let him who can do it accept this teaching." Again, in New English Bible translation, "This is something which not everyone can accept, but only those for whom God has appointed it. For while some are incapable of marriage because they were born so, or were made so by men, there are others who have themselves renounced marriage for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let those accept it who can." Very interesting statements, aren't they? Now, if you can remember and appreciate the first part of what I gave a few minutes ago, and at the same time see this, if you can see and appreciate the beauty and the importance and the urgency of what I'm studying now and still not forget the other, this is important. All right, now a few further statements on this. Let's go to 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter. You notice that while Christ gave exalted concepts of marriage, he has in this passage in Matthew 19 clearly stated that there are some people who would choose not to marry. For what reason? For the sake of the kingdom of heaven, for the sake of the work of God. Now, with this agrees the statement of Paul in 1 Corinthians 7. 1 Corinthians 7, the 7th verse, and 8. 1 Corinthians 7, 7 and 8. "For I would that all men were even as I myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner and another after that. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I." And the next word is "but." Paul recognized, as Christ recognized, that what was said along this line was not for everybody. My point is, it is for somebody. And don't worry, my dear friend, young and old, don't worry. Because you will not, how shall I put it? Nobody's going to catch you and make you do this or that. It is your vision and your choice that determines this. And this is what Jesus says. All men cannot receive it, save they to whom it's given. Now, Jesus said it was for the sake of the work of God. Notice how Paul in this same chapter, verses 32 to 34, state some very plain facts. 32 to 34. "But I would have you without carefulness," that is, without worry, anxiety. "He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the world, to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife." Isn't that an interesting verse? Somebody said, "What's the matter?" Paul's just stating a fact. The truth of the matter is, when a man marries a wife, he'd better be thinking about how to please her, hadn't he? Isn't that right? Isn't that what he promises to do? What Paul is saying is that there is a freedom to devote one's entire energies to the work of God in the single state that are often lacking in the marriage. Well, says one, couldn't a person do that and be married? I wouldn't say it's impossible. There have been a few people that have. Yeah. There are a few cases in history, in Bible history, in the history of this denomination, when a man and a woman were married and yet devoted themselves both in an outstanding way to the work of God. James and Ellen White's a good example in this denomination. But in most cases, dear friends, in many cases, it doesn't work that way. Notice the 34th verse. "There is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. the unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Now, we'll read some Spirit of Prophecy statements to go with this. We've just been reading from Paul there in 1 Corinthians 7. Here is a Spirit of Prophecy comment on this from the Old Review volumes, review of March 24, 1868. March 24, 1868. If Paul could remain single and recommend the same to others, that he and they might be wholly the Lord's, why not those who would be wholly his and wish to make a sure thing of avoiding the cares, trials, and bitter anguish so frequent in the experiences of those who choose the married life, remain as he was? And more, if he chose to remain so and could recommend it to others 18 centuries ago, would not to remain as he was be a commendable course for those who are waiting for the coming of the Son of Man? Unless evidences were unquestionable that they were bettering their condition and making heaven more sure by so doing. When so much is at stake, why not be on the sure side every time? With that, volume 5, page 366. And I simply read this sentence. I'm not going to interpret it. I'm certainly not going to twist it. And I'm certainly not going to modify it. I'm just going to read it. In this age of the world, as the scenes of earth's history are soon to close, and we are about to enter upon the time of trouble such as never was, the fewer the marriages contracted, the better for all, both men and women. Now, in Series B, number 16, page 16, and I gave you this wonderful little Series B some weeks ago in this class. You've done some studying of it. But on page 16, note this statement, the bottom of the page. I repeat, do not enter into a marriage engagement unless there are good and sufficient reasons for this step, unless the work of God can be better advanced thereby. For Christ's sake, deny inclination, lift the cross, and do the work for which you are educating yourselves. You see, the popular concept is, at least in many minds, that you really can't do much in life until you get married. But here the prophet of God urges young people to get busy and do what? The work for which they are educated, and not let this interfere. Now, take your Adventist home. Yeah, we'll come to the Adventist home statement a little later, just a little later. All right, let me sum this up then. We have on the one hand some wonderful statements in the Bible and Spirit of Prophecy, exalting marriage as a divine institution from the Garden of Eden, and every divine institution is to be restored in its fullness and beauty in these last days. We see the definite call, especially to some people and some responsibilities, to be married, to act as shepherds, and so forth, all this. And yet with it, we have equally clear the call to some people to the single life, both men and women, to devote their energies without any distraction to the one work of soul winning and bringing the kingdom of God. I repeat, friends, it's a wonderful thing to have your mind broad enough to take in both concepts, not one to the exclusion of the other, and not the other to the exclusion of the one. This is the thing. Now, in the same way as we must have that broad vision on the point of marriage, we need an equally broad vision on the question of the bearing of children. From time to time, people raise the question, well, what do you think about should children be born in these last days? Have we reached the time when we ought to consider that? Frankly, friends, I know of nothing in the Bible or the Spirit of Prophecy that teaches that we have now reached a time or that we will reach a certain time when we can say, well, it's time that no more children be born. If there's any statement like that, I'm not acquainted with it. And I certainly wouldn't want to make a statement that I couldn't give a reference for, especially on such an important subject. Would you? No. All we know in matters of the divine will is what God has said. Now turn to Adventist Home, page 159. And I want you to notice this wonderful chapter entitled, Children, a Blessing. Down through the ages, God has made the bearing and the rearing of children not only a means of perpetuating the race, He has made it a wonderful means of education to the parents. That's right. We have an example of this in the case of Enoch. You remember there in the 5th of Genesis? Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years. He knew God some before he had that child. But as he had that child, and the little fellow began to grow and toddle after him, Enoch learned a lot about God he didn't know before. And as you read here in this chapter, Children of Blessing, I won't have time to read it all, but I call your attention to the exalted concept given here of the bearing and the rearing of children. A wonderful concept. For instance, this says, Children are the heritage of the Lord, second paragraph. Third one, the childless house is a desolate place. The hearts of the inmates are in danger of becoming selfish, of cherishing a love for their own ease and consulting their own desires and convenience. Why, yes, when two people that are married, they just look across the table every morning at breakfast and every night at supper, and all they have to think about is themselves. They can get just about as selfish as anybody in the world. But let me tell you, by the time they have one, two, three children, and they cry in the night and have to be taken care of and changed and all this and looked after when they're sick, they don't have near as much time to think about themselves. And there are a lot of other reasons. The disciplining of them, the teaching them. It's quite an education. Quite an education. On 160, the prophet says, I have a very tender interest in all children. I have always felt that association with the simplicity of childhood was a great blessing to me. Next paragraph. The presence of a child in a home sweetens and refines. Isn't that nice? So, there is ample room for exalted concepts of the call of God to bear children. And God has called some people to adopt children, too. You find a whole chapter on that, I believe, in the book Welfare Ministry. But now, with that clearly before us, it's equally clear that there's another side to this question. Turn to Adventist Home, page 162. There's a tremendous statement in the third paragraph. What's the first word in that third paragraph? Before. Before. Before increasing their family, they should take into consideration whether God would be glorified or dishonored by their bringing children into the world. Look at that sentence and tell me. Is God glorified by the bearing of children in some cases? Is that what this says? Look at the sentence. Tell me. Is God glorified in some cases? Yes, that's what it says. Is it equally true that God is dishonored in some cases by bringing children into the world? And when are people to consider this? Before increasing their family. That's it. All right. 163. If you read that page, you will see that they're not to increase their family any faster than the parents are sure of properly providing for them. Now on 165 and 166, we have a wonderful paragraph here at the bottom of the page on the relation of this whole question to missionary work. In sending missionaries to distant countries, those men should be selected who know how to economize, who have not large families, and who, realizing the shortness of time, does the shortness of time have anything to do with this? Realizing the shortness of time and the great work to be accomplished, will not fill their hands and houses with children, but will keep themselves as free as possible from everything that will divert their minds from their one great work. The wife, if devoted and left free to do so, can, by standing by the side of her husband, accomplish as much as he. God has blessed woman with talents to be used to his glory in bringing many sons and daughters to God. But many who might be efficient laborers are kept at home to care for their little ones. Now you notice, to some people, God has, as it were, offered the choice of whether they want to have a few children of their own or whether they want to bring many sons and daughters to God. That's talking about spiritual childbearing, soul winning, in other words. Yes. And I want to tell you, my dear friends, there are women who could win 10 times as many souls to God in soul winning as they could ever have natural, born to them. 10 times as many in a lifetime. But this isn't to say that a particular person is not to have children. You see, you can see from what we've already read here that in some cases, children are the way that God gets some people ready for heaven. There are some people going to be in heaven never would have gotten there if they hadn't had children. You can be sure of that. They're so selfish in having the children, having to look after them. And that isn't the only reason. Don't misunderstand me. But we read that here, didn't we? Yeah. So you can see this is a broad subject. And we need to keep from being dogmatic.